Welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. We were away last week.
Yes, we were. It was right after Labor Day, and it was a primary day and everything else. So
we took a long
first day
weekend.
Of school. Yeah.
So anyway, I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
And well, I guess some interesting things have happened.
Today is 9/11, and it is a Tuesday, so it is kind of.
Remarkable. Oh, that's right. Wasn't that originally Tuesday?
It was a Tuesday.
I actually thought about that this morning. I actually said in the kitchen this morning. I said I was kind of glad it was a cloudy day.
Yeah, because that day
it was beautiful, sunny day.
I know.
And I get very sad when it's a beautiful, sunny day on September 11th.
I know. You're right.
So in a way, it was just different enough.
You're right.
To kind of take the edge off.
You're right.
About it.
We will never forget, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting how there's certain incidents, like when, for those of us who are old enough, to when President Kennedy was assassinated, or when the Challenger disaster occurred.
Yeah, that's true. And like for my parents' generation and your Pearl Harbor must have
that's
been.
That's right. There are these pivotal moments where they're so etched in people's minds.
You just can't.
Where were you, and everybody knows.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how the mind works
right.
that way.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, since 2 weeks ago, we did have an election, a primary election last week, September 4th.
Exciting,
And you know, it was actually pretty interesting.
Yes.
Some of the things were predictable, some of the things are not so predictable.
Yeah.
And you know, and there's a lot of 2020 hindsight of people, including me, I suppose, who would say, oh yeah, I could see it coming. But honestly, I don't know that I really could see a lot of the
Yeah, well,
coming.
When you don't quite get out of Cambridge, and even though Cambridge was pretty, if we're talking about the 7th District, it was pretty pro-Iana, but still, if you don't go to Dorchester and you don't go to Boston and you don't really see what's going on the ground, you don't really know.
Well, you know, another thing, too, is that a lot, you know, people talk a lot about campaign finance and the influence of money in politics, but I think what we're starting to see more and more...
You can do it cheaply.
...is that it's not actually the money that's winning elections, it's actually social media.
Absolutely.
And I think President Obama is probably...
He started it.
...people really, really...
You and now there's a whole thing about digital texting, which you don't know because you don't have an iPad.
What is this thing called digital texting?
Do you get texts on your iPad? If you paid for a service,
I pick up that iPad maybe once every 3 weeks, so I don't even know.
It is the new wave because I got two personal digital texts regarding, I forget, the governor, somebody. And then you actually can respond back and you say, no, I can't attend. And they say, thank you for letting me know. And it's the new thing and it's cheap to do.
Right. And actually, there was, there was one of the things that was in Tip O'Neill's book, like All Politics is Local.
Yeah, you didn't have cell phones back then.
Right, but the thing is, there was a phrase, there was a story about a woman who he'd known his whole life, and he asked, did you vote? And he says, did you vote for me? And and says, Tommy, you didn't ask, People like to be asked. And
that's why face-to-face, bottom line, knocking on doors.
That's
is really important.
But even the perception that you've been asked seems to matter. And this is true not only in politics, this is true for street performers. You know, people say that if you're a street performer, if you're, let's say, a juggler or a magician or whatever, the thing is if you want to make some money, which is sort of the street performer equivalent of getting votes, right?
Yeah.
You should really get the audience engaged. And to whatever degree you get the audience engaged, they feel a part of it, and then
since
they
when
vote
is
for
it,
you.
Isn't that like obvious and like most human interactions?
At some level,
obvious. If you're not a good teacher,
right?
Do you engage your students?
Right. But the thing is that if you look at the way a lot of, because I'm on various mail lists for political things, and they invariably have an ask in the letter. You know, they're either asking for money or they're asking you to come to this or come to that. Or they seem to be asking your opinion in a survey or a poll.
Yeah.
Even if they're not really keeping track of anything in the poll.
Well, I don't know about that. I think some of their minions might be.
Right. But the thing is that, people simply want to have the perception that
that their opinion matters.
Yeah.
That somebody cares about me. That somebody is interested.
Right.
I
think volunteerism in campaigns actually works doubly so.
Absolutely.
And I heard a story, this was about one of the Kennedys. I don't remember
which one. Yeah.
Could have been Joe Kennedy, back when he was the congressman, but I don't really know. But it turned out there were too many volunteers showed up.
Too many.
Right. Well, the Kennedys, right? And they didn't want to have people feel like they weren't wanted. So this is sort of a horrible thing in a way, but apparently, as the story goes, they had some people putting things into envelopes in one room, and then they had volunteers in another room taking them out because they just wanted people to feel like they were engaged in the activity.
Are you sure that's true?
Well, it could be just one of those stories that's told, right?
Yeah, that's
But the idea was you didn't want people to sort of go out of their way to do volunteer work.
Yeah, but if somebody just wandered into that room, that would really cost them a bunch.
Well, what you really should have is something for everybody to do. You should always have a list
of things.
I
doubt if that's really a problem anymore, if too many people showing up
to
volunteer.
It's probably not, actually.
But if you show, like, for canvassing, then you send two at a time out instead of just one, because usually you just have one.
Yeah,
but anyway,
So you should immediately have some
lists. I don't think that's an issue these days.
Right. If anybody comes in, just hand them a list and go say, knock on some doors.
And now with you can call from home, you get lists, so there's no, you'll always want more people.
Right.
Never turn down a volunteer for anything.
That's really true, yeah. But anyway, the main point here is simply that.
So were you surprised at all? Let's look at the key ones that where there was contestant.
Yeah, let's actually look at some here.
We have Robert who always does this for every election, which is just so wonderful.
These are just some of the key results. You know, we're not going to do all of them. So there's so many uncontested seats. So we're just
Let's just do the ones that were contested. Now we're looking at both Democrat and Republican primaries.
Yeah. So in terms of the Democratic the primary for governor for the Democrats, I think most of the handwriting on the wall was for Jay Gonzalez.
Yeah.
And there were in the primary. Now, there were some of the Massey people are very, very emphatic. You know, their zeal is not to be denied.
Yeah.
To the point where it actually started to infuriate me, like when I was going down for, I think it was the fireworks, July 4th. Mm-hmm. The Massey people are the only ones who felt absolutely entitled to put their posters up on every public poll anywhere they want, anytime they wanted.
Yeah, that's
because after all, you know, they're the righteous ones, right? So I actually started getting pretty irritated with him and his volunteers, quite honestly. But I thought Gonzalez was going to win this hands down. It is interesting to me.
Well, it is. What are you talking about? It's 64-35.
Yeah, hands down.
Right.
So I thought that was how it was going to go.
Yeah.
And in a certain way, and I'm a little surprised at this because I was a convention delegate.
Yeah.
At June or July?
June.
And, you know, Gonzalez won the endorsement of the convention.
Right.
Right. And I forget exactly what the percentages were.
But it was higher, right?
It was sort of in that ballpark.
Oh, was it the same? Yeah.
So am I starting to believe that maybe, I'm not really believing this, but is it possible that the representation at the convention might actually have been reflective of Democratic voters?
Hmm.
I don't usually believe that because party convention goers tend to be the most one-sided of all.
Yeah, I know, but Robert, this is a primary, so who shows up at primaries? People that vote a lot. Right, but I'm just saying, so I don't see why that would be any different from the, you know.
Well, actually, it's sort of like the representation on your ward committee versus regular Democrats, though.
Look at the Cambridge, you clearly see there were people maybe that are newer that, you know.
Well, and you also see Massey had, you know, sort of probably
higher
driven
votes
by the climate change issue. Massey got associated with being the one who was going to be a big fighter for.
Well, also he is not the establishment. That's how people see it. In some ways, I mean, he's an outsider.
I think because Gonzalez worked within.
He worked within the Patrick administration, and he's seen more. And he was supported by a lot of establishment Democrats. And Massey is more of, you know, I shouldn't say, I don't really know, but more the we're using the word progressive, which I think is unfair, but
Massey's run for other things in the past,
but look at all those blanks though. How do you account for that? People who didn't care about the governor, or maybe they're going to vote for Baker.
And it's interesting, that's actually just in that's the Cambridge
government. I know, but that's what I'm looking at.
The thing is, that's probably reflective across the
across
the board. Yeah,
it'd be interesting to see
I don't think
the statewide
been all that different in terms of number of blanks.
I don't know.
Percentage.
Yeah. Okay. Right. All right.
But so anyway, I wasn't at all surprised with that result. In terms of Charlie Baker, I thought, of course, he was going to win. Some people are making a big story about the fact that, well, he only got 64-36.
Well, actually, they're concerned because he apparently also is leaning towards Jeff Deal over Warren, and that's problematic.
I know it is problematic, yeah. but the thing is that so much political rhetoric starts to just get spawned yeah. around now. So
right.
everybody's going to try to associate Baker as much with Trump as they possibly can.
Yeah, but if he does a little... I'm going to see what happens, because I like yeah. him and I like Gonzalez, but right now I'm just going to wait and see.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the numbers prior to the primaries were that any Democrat was going to, in this bluest of blue states...
Yeah.
The Democratic nominee, whoever it was going to be, was still going to have an uphill battle to
Absolutely.
Defeat the Republican.
Right.
There are many people I know now who are actually starting to maybe take a somewhat different view of that, and that maybe Baker is beatable, but largely yeah. they say it depends on voter turnout. Like, so if all the Democrats were to
right.
show up and vote because they're all energized because like they hate Trump or whatever, then actually Gonzalez could beat Baker. I think it's actually a possibility.
It's possible if this stuff about him coming out more, you know, rather than staying on the sidelines about this
right.
Jeff Deal, who's really not,
yeah.
he's a very Trump person.
Right.
And that would be problematic.
If Baker were to say something more like, listen, I support my party,
mm-hmm.
right? That said, I've got my race to run. And
right.
and I'm not particularly
He's worried about that 36% that voted for Scott Lively. But you know what? It's only 36%. He could still win by 52%. And,
right.
and look at the statewide thing. It's 74-25.
Well,
so
but also keep in mind
what's he worried about?
If you're a Republican...
Oh, no, that was a statewide. Sorry, that was Cambridge.
Right,
yeah.
If you're a Republican, the only race really on the ballot of any interest might have been that one and maybe the Senate one. So the thing is...
They're interested.
Right,
yeah.
but the thing is
yeah.
that a lot of the Republicans would have just stayed home.
Right.
I think.
That's true.
You know, and a lot of the independents probably would have picked up a Democratic ballot.
Right.
Because it was a little more interesting to vote that. So we'll see how the independents
right.
go. You know, yeah. Now, I kind of, even though
yeah.
I love Jimmy Tingle to death,
right.
and I was really hoping he would win.
Yeah.
I'm
not surprised.
I kind of always thought it was an uphill battle.
Yeah.
And again, in the same tone as
mm-hmm.
the convention versus the primary. Jimmy Tingle got about 40% at the convention. He got about 40% in the regular primary election.
Okay, but Quentin Palfrey was nominated by the Democratic convention, or
yes,
not? No,
Palfrey
supported.
Got
okay.
the convention nod.
Okay. Yeah, I mean
he
worked in the Obama administration.
No,
I mean I don't know much about him, but he seems pretty.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean it's remarkable. No, everybody I talked to though
mm-hmm.
seemed to think that Tingle, even though Palfrey was winning it here, is that the logic was that Tingle would actually benefit the Democratic ticket.
Yeah.
Better.
Right.
You know, but
well,
you know, would draw more voters to vote for the Democrats. But we'll see how it plays out.
Someone close to me said on the day, because he wasn't even going to vote, and I said, you should vote for Jimmy Tingle. I said, isn't he a comedian? So that's
yeah.
as far.
You're switching back just to show.
Yeah.
Human
okay.
beings,
yeah. Right. We can go back to that
just
in a minute.
A podcast.
Right.
right.
Well,
right.
I wouldn't mind a podcast.
Yeah. Right. Well, actually, we've been putting up the audios of this thing here lately too.
Okay.
So, so anyway, back to this here.
All right. So now this is an interesting one. The Secretary of State.
Now, I absolutely believe that even though Zakim managed to squeak out the convention endorsement.
That's right.
I never thought that was solid.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think he really, really sort of did himself a disservice in so many ways as
yeah.
a candidate.
Some of his debates performance wasn't that good.
But I think
yeah.
part of that is just because... You know, there's one thing, when you feel that you're actually not winning,
mm-hmm.
you can, you know, you can, there's several things you can do, one of which is you start trying to throw Hail Marys.
Yeah.
You know, you start saying, well, let me go negative, let me attack.
Well, who went negative first? Because they both had negative stuff.
Well, what I would say to that is that if you actually go back to even at the convention, which was
okay.
all peace, love, and understanding,
yeah.
Zakim came out basically saying, screw Galvin, and he was really being emphatically
But did
negative.
He bring up those votes about the 30 years ago?
No, not then.
Not then,
no,
okay.
No. So the thing is Zakim,
yeah.
from
mm-hmm.
the very beginning,
yeah.
was being very, very harsh against
okay.
Galvin.
Okay.
And Galvin, you could see in everything he was saying, doing, and you
he
know,
was trying to just keep not get in
getting,
the fray.
He was legitimately getting pissed
sure.
off, quite honestly.
Oh, no, you could, yeah.
And I think that when it came time to have that on-air bit with Jim Browdy, Galvin was basically
That was the
saying,
last one, I
yeah.
think.
So
they
I think,
did a couple, I think.
So
but,
Galvin pretty
yeah.
much came back and said, okay, kid,
right.
you want to beat me up?
Yeah.
We'll show you how to play the
yeah.
game, right?
Well, that would already been in the papers about
right.
his voting record and stuff like
yeah.
that. Yeah.
So I thought yeah. Galvin was going to win easily.
Huh.
I didn't think it was necessarily going to be like 2-1.
Well, certainly, because first of all, this was a statewide race. If it was only Boston and Cambridge, he might have pulled it off.
Might
well,
have.
Well, yeah, well, look at Cambridge. Look at his numbers in Cambridge. He won. Zakim.
Zakim?
Yeah.
Yeah. But we squeaked by.
Right. Hey, so did Trump.
I think, I think part of the reason for that is that it's actually related to the Presley. There's certain voters of certain age actually came out in far greater numbers, I think, though I don't have the...
I know some older people that vote that had signs for Massey and Zakim and Tingle.
But so much of this is about voter turnout. So the thing is, if you have people who normally wouldn't even be coming out to vote...
They're going
to
vote for the young progressive guy, right.
You know, if you don't know who they are, but one seems like the young...
And he's been around too long. He's been around too long. He's old. Let's get rid of him.
Right. So the, you know, there's a certain amount of resonance.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad. I mean, I voted for Gal.
I felt positively about Galvin, and actually it's really interesting. It actually relates to something that's happening in the 3rd congressional district.
Yes,
the
thing
I've pointed out that when Bill Galvin, you know, there's a actual real movement right now from people around Massachusetts and around the country to promote ranked choice voting,
which is similar to what we do.
We use ranked choice voting in Cambridge, but we do it to elect multiple people in proportionally.
That's true.
So some people screw up the definitions of proportional representation and ranked choice
voting. Right, because that's more than one person filling a seat, but the idea is the same.
The idea of basically having first, your ballot second choice, sort of third act choice. As proxy for the person, say, well, if I don't get my first, I'll take my second. If I don't get my second, I'll
and then
take
those
my third.
Votes get as they get pulled up.
It's
and then
like a series of runoffs, which is why it used
much
to be called,
more fair.
It used to be called instant runoff voting. So, but the thing about Galvin was that, and I pointed this out to people, when Howie Fain, myself, and a few others were involved in this
fair
group,
vote.
It was called the Fair Ballot Alliance of Massachusetts, which was kind of spun off around the same time as the Center for Voting Democracy, which eventually became Fair Vote, which is a national organization.
Okay.
They're promoting ranked choice balloting and alternate voting systems all around the country.
Mm-hmm.
So we were doing this back or maybe around 1992, 94, somewhere around there.
Okay,
25 years ago.
Yeah.
And 24 years ago... There was this guy named Bill Galvin who had been, a state rep.
He was a state rep, right.
Then his first-time candidate to be Secretary of State.
Okay.
And there were multiple candidates. I believe one of the other candidates that year was Michael Capilano.
No.
Somebody
for Secretary of State?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
So he was mayor of Somerville, right?
Oh, so he had...
Thought he might move up. At least somebody said that to me. I didn't actually remember.
All right, so don't quote us completely. We have to look it up.
I could be crazy, right? So anyway, so we asked. I didn't personally do the asking. Howie did, but we asked all the candidates, well, would you support, you know, ranked ballots and preferential voting and even proportional representation or instant runoff voting or whatever you want to call it back then?
Wow.
It was one candidate who said, sure.
And it was Galvin?
It was Galvin.
So what's happened?
And it's kind of funny because now sort of ranked choice voting is sort of in the vanguard. You know, this is what progressives
all want.
Isn't
Maine doing that for a little bit?
It is, actually. Yeah. And the Republicans sort of tried to fight back on it, but in fact they did a people's override.
Yay.
So it's actually been done,
Good.
So it's in place now for all the state elections.
So why hasn't it happened then in the state?
Well, the thing is, you know, the way I like to explain it, I was talking to somebody on the phone last night about this, Massachusetts has almost all of the state Senate and state rep seats are unopposed.
True.
So they win under the system as it is today, even if the system is
horribly flawed.
So the general rule is if you're winning and getting reelected every couple of years under a system, why change the system?
But why not just have it kick in when there's more than two candidates or more than one?
Well, you have to change the state law to allow that to happen.
Well, let's change the state law.
And the legislators, they're not the only ones who can do that. Now, I'm not 100% sure, but this Voter Choice Massachusetts, or whatever the name is.
Yes, someone came around and canvassed me about that. Is that different than Fair Vote?
They work in conjunction. Fair Vote is national, so this
is
local.
Choice
but
is...
in a sense, they're kind of a local chapter of
Fair that's
Vote
good to know.
For all intents and purposes. So the thing is that you know they're promoting ranked choice voting around the state now, and it's actually getting a much better reception than I've ever seen.
Well, again, for a younger electorate.
Maybe it's time has come, finally. Yeah. You know, for those of us who were pushing it 25 years ago, that wasn't the time. But maybe the time is right now.
That's good.
Now, I don't think that, I mean, I would be surprised if the legislature took the action to enact it.
Hmm.
But the strategy may very well to be
Can
to
the governor
make this.
Do it? No. Oh, can it be a ballot initiative?
It could be an initiative petition. So I don't know if that's exactly the plan. I think I've heard it, but I don't know if that's actually what's happening.
A binding one, not a non-binding.
Well, initiative petition is a binding
is it,
one.
Okay,
it's not
initiative
like a referendum.
Is,
yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, sort of like when they outlawed rent control, that was an initiative petition. So
right.
The, you know, the legislature could maybe try and
tweak
it.
I would like to do
it.
That.
Right, so that may be how it gets enacted.
Okay.
But you've got to win people over. And the truth is that...
Mm-hmm.
You have to do a lot of voter education to get people to understand that this is not.
But I think
weird.
This third congressional district race is really going to be a great example of it.
So let's mention that.
Yeah, yes.
I don't actually have the stats on this, but well, I actually have them, but just to
okay.
Yeah. Okay, so we should mention the big one, big elephant in the room was Capuano Presley. We only alluded to it.
Yeah, we can talk a little
right,
bit in the next segment.
Yeah, but the real contest here was. It was the third congressional district.
Well,
which
no,
is...
wait. I wouldn't phrase it that way. There was a contest between Ayanna Presley and Mike.
Oh, yeah. But,
okay,
but
it's
the,
a different
the,
kind
the,
of contest.
Let's call it the Wild, Wild
the,
West
right,
contest.
Right, because there were 10 candidates.
10 candidates in a
yes.
Democratic primary. And think about how absurd this is.
Yeah.
A usually low voter turnout September primary
mm-hmm.
with 10 candidates horribly splitting the vote.
Right, day after Labor Day.
Right, to get elected one winner take all.
Right.
Who then runs unopposed because there's no Republican challenger in November.
There is none.
Well, even if there was, it would be kind
still,
of a
it's
formality.
Almost, yeah.
Right? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I've made the point over and over again that if Massachusetts legislators, mostly Democrats, my friends,
yes.
want to call themselves progressive and they don't look into changing a voting system to correct
yeah.
something as so idiotic as that,
yeah.
you have no right to call yourself progressive or
well,
even
to correct
wise.
What? That there's that they run unopposed?
No, no, you can't change that.
No.
But the thing is that if you change an election system, and there are a variety of things
more
you
people
do.
Might vote, more people might run because their vote might count more.
Or even or, if not more, if, even if there weren't a whole lot of increase in voter turnout, at least the way the counting of the ballots actually came to elect somebody would make more sense.
Right, but I'm saying more people might run for an office if they knew they had more of a chance than just
with
running against
ballots.
One.
That
right.
is that
yeah.
is true that
to some extent.
That you there is a good likelihood you'll get more people jumping in because they figure, you know, sometimes it's out of ignorance, quite honestly, if you say,
right.
well, hey, if it's ranked right, we can all do it's transferable votes, maybe I'll get lucky.
Yeah.
But truth is that it's still usually the top vote
sure.
getters that win.
Right. Right.
But not always. And there
right.
are some spectacular examples when
mm.
that wasn't the case.
Hmm.
You know, in San Francisco and in Vermont and elsewhere.
San Francisco has
ranchers voting for the Board of Supervisors,
okay.
the mayor. Yeah, I think they have a maximum of 3 that you can vote for because
oh.
it's limitations in the voting hardware.
Okay.
Sequoia voting machines only allow 3 rankings. So,
oh, okay.
So it goes. More and more voting machines, as they're being manufactured, have a little more flexibility to allow more rankings. So. And that's partly because I think the manufacturers don't want to get caught short
right.
having machines when a state or a municipality wants ones that can do ranked choice voting, and they say, sorry, we can't help you.
Right, so that's good that they're changing.
Customer.
It's good that
right.
they're seeing ahead. Yeah,
exactly. You know, and actually Cambridge can help here because you know we actually have to have custom programming done for municipal
right.
elections. And all of that programming can be used, actually.
I think people have requested it, haven't
yeah.
they, over
oh,
the
yeah.
years?
Yeah. Yeah, so the thing is that the voting machines that we'll use in Cambridge could then be used for ranked choice voting anywhere then, you know. So,
yay.
You know, so that's a way to go. Anyway, what happened in the third congressional
yeah.
district? So I'm not going to give all the names of the candidates, but there was
well,
Coe,
the top were Laurie Trahan and Dan Coe.
And Dan Coe, and they both got approximately 21.6% of the votes.
Right.
Okay. Trahan was up by, I think, about 122.
Well, the final count was 152, counting provisionals, I think. And
it was 122 by the Art of Newspaper.
Oh, 122. I was thinking 52
it
at first,
down
and then
to
it was
52, and then up to 122.
Yeah.
So the thing is that I believe the recount is going on now, but the interesting thing...
You have to do it by Monday.
The deadline is Monday to September 17th.
There's 37 towns that voted in this,
right.
which
so,
I didn't realize.
So when they do the recounts, they do it within each town. And they
right.
basically just have to do all the validations. There's a surprisingly high number of ballots that appear to be blank.
Exactly, but they might have circled the name instead
that's
of filling.
Right. And
so they're trying, and Galvin is pointing that out.
That's right.
They've
now,
all got to be looked at.
It's an interesting thing, speaking
yeah.
of Bill Galvin,
yeah.
is that he actually looked and saw the sort of the elections
discrepancies.
Official. Apparently, there was like one last skilled election official, I think, in Lawrence, who was on the road,
right.
who was about
right.
to leave the
That's
job.
That's right.
So basically said, look, you guys screwed up a lot of things
yeah.
in the procedures of handling the ballots.
Right.
So the Secretary of State's office has taken over the recount.
It's both in Lowell and Lawrence, too,
yes.
both of them.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. So the thing is, you know, so it matters.
Yep.
You know, obviously it matters. But in the end, it's just to adjudicate, you know, a contest where two candidates got were differed by
sure.
0.14%.
And it just goes to show you every vote matters. When you get down to something like that, out of what, 26, they, together they got what, 36,000 votes?
Right, but I would also argue if 21.6, add the two together, it's 43.2% of the ballots seem to be fighting each other.
Yeah.
And the other 58% are basically mm-hmm. being thrown in the dumpster because
Oh, I agree.
No
well, then,
that,
right, I'm just saying every... When people say their vote doesn't count,
right.
that's
I mean,
not
vote
true.
Splitting is a big deal. So if you
yeah.
have two candidates who are roughly
yeah.
similar and they both have some appeal,
yeah.
then they can split the vote, and then you have one person who didn't have a comparable candidate ends up greatly advantaged
yeah.
in this. It's interesting, actually, when Mike Capuano was first elected for this for what was then the 8th Congressional District,
right.
there were eight candidates, I believe, and he got
that's
through.
True.
He was in with like 23% of the vote,
huh.
right? That's all he got. And
they didn't need more than that?
No, because they split it eight ways. And
I remember this now. It's Chris Gabrielli.
Gabrielli was
and
in
then there.
Ray
was
Flynn
the...
was in there.
Right.
And the thing is there was a very real chance that Ray Flynn, who was the only
yeah.
Pro-life candidate.
That's true.
Because he was the only one,
yeah.
had a very good chance of being the person who would be elected
oh,
because
thank
all
goodness
the other
we didn't
seven
get that.
Candidates... Right, it would have been a spectacular example of the ridiculousness of how election systems work without some sort of transferable votes.
Yeah.
So,
anyway, we can talk a little more about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so we're almost
next,
out of time on this
yeah.
one, but we'll talk a little bit more about it because I think it's a really interesting
yes.
topic. And then we can
it is, and it's
come
the,
back
yes.
to that a little bit closer to home. So,
right.
anyway, we got another election coming up in November, so...
that's right,
you know,
important.
But this was the more interesting one, so...
Seems
anyway,
to be.
See you
in see
a few.
In a bit. Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
And we've been just doing some election review and
wacky on elections.
Policy stuff in
yeah.
terms of elections and changes
right.
that needed,
yeah.
are needed.
So the big thing we were just talking about
yeah.
was the 3rd Congressional District.
Right.
And we'll know
That's
by September 17th, next Monday, well, who the actual winner is. It'll
will
probably
it be that soon?
Well, the thing is that when you do a recount, in this case here, it's not as complicated as it would be for a Cambridge municipal election. Pretty
oh.
much you just have to validate
Oh, because they're
the
not
votes,
transferring,
and then
right.
And you just take the totals and add them up.
Right, because some,
so
yeah, okay,
the, so the,
good.
So the final results are as...
But they do have to look at some of the ones that they had circled a name instead of, because they counted them as blank. He wants to look at the blanks.
That's right.
So what was the voter's intent?
So exactly. So
yeah.
there will be additional
yeah.
ballots thrown in, but the thing
yeah.
is that if the ballots with errors were voted more or less in the same proportions that the regular election
yeah.
were, which is what you might originally expect,
yeah.
then it shouldn't change the outcome.
No.
Right? It might just, everybody would go up a little bit, but,
right.
But
right.
it won't change much. But, you know, it is a question is 122 or whatever it was, number of ballots.
122.
Is that a big margin to overcome when you're talking about a total of 18,000 votes? It's actually pretty
small. Wait, 18,000 for both of them or for each?
The Trahan over Dan Coe, it was 18,500.
Right, but I'm saying they each got
18,
eight,
4,
so
5.
It's out of...
They each got over 18,000, and it's
right.
a 100-vote margin between them.
Yeah,
So that's actually with it's 0.1%
oh, there's
difference.
There's a chance.
There is a possibility.
Yeah.
But
I do hope she pulls it off. I'd like to see a woman kept in that seat.
I think that's probably what will happen there, yeah.
He's good, but he's... So,
yeah. Right, but the thing is, and we should talk about that, not to belabor the issue too
yeah.
much, but the thing is that already people who are advocates for alternate voting systems and ranked choice balloting
yeah.
are using this for
yeah.
for good reason.
Yes, excellent.
As now a school books example
of why it would have
made
a difference.
Ranked choice voting would
yeah.
make a lot of sense.
Yep.
For the longest time, I've actually said that for vacancy fills, that we should do it by a single election with transferable ballots.
Yeah.
You know, or else just a gubernatorial appointment. I'd be happy with that, for God's sake.
Well, that's what they do in a lot of places.
In some places,
yeah.
yeah. But if you're going to have an election, do have a real election. You know, make it real
yeah.
And do it right. You know, California, they did a system where, across the state, where you could have a bunch of the candidates in an open primary regardless of
a party.
So you could have two Democrats fighting, going against each other in the November election. Or you could have had two Republicans.
It makes sense to me. First of all, it would save a lot of
I think
procedures.
Ranked choice ballots would be preferable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A top two runoff is not preferable, but it's better. Right, because with top two, you could still have a person who, in a ranked choice system, might actually have won, might not finish in the top two, but would have been the consensus candidate of many. So that's not usually what happens, but it can happen. So there is no perfect voting system, but the thing is, plurality elections and winner-take-all elections are ridiculous for when you have a lot of candidates.
And the Electoral College, they have to figure that one out.
Yeah, but the thing is, there's another thing. Where is the
incentive? Well, they should make fraction. Well, because in some states, they actually divide those electoral
votes. Right, but the thing is right now, the...
Is it Colorado?
The
Nevada?
Republicans seem to be getting the advantage in the system as it is.
Well,
so are you going to get those red states? Because you remember, it's 3/4 of the states have to say yay to a constitutional amendment.
One of those red states, though, does have that, I thought. Well, maybe not. Yeah, don't quote me. But the point is, we have to change it. It doesn't work.
I really think we should change it.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
But, trying to find the political path to the solution isn't always such an easy thing.
Okay.
All right, so anyway.
So the big race
locally, that was all over the news.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't all of Cambridge. It was my area of Cambridge, and it was parts of North Cambridge.
Right, I'm Catherine Park.
And those are the only two, right?
Right.
So what district is that?
It's 5 and 7, so I'm 5.
It's 5, the 5th district, okay.
Yeah. And there was after the renumbering, because the Capuano was elected originally as part of the East Congressional
District.
It's 8,
I know.
And
then
the last,
it is now the most... but what I was confused by, and I guess I've been corrected, is that when that was redrawn, it was Democrats that did it to make it more... diverse. Is that, am I wrong about that? It wasn't Republicans. We've never had Republicans here to do that.
No. So it was done, and actually part of that, there was some, right, so they wanted to create
something
in the spirit of the Voting Rights Act to have at least one majority-minority.
And that's what the 7th is.
And that's what it was, right?
Yeah.
Now, oftentimes you draw districts, if you have an incumbent, you redraw it
to make the
incumbent more safe, right?
Right.
So this would be an exception.
Right. And it's the most, it's the only one in the state.
Right.
Like that.
Right. Now, I don't know whether, had they not created a majority-minority district, whether there would have been a court challenge. I somehow doubt that, but you
know, how long has it been the 7th?
Well, the census would have been, it's every 10 years.
Oh, okay. So it was 2010?
Well, no, because the thing is the census takes place in 2010. It takes a while to gather up the stats and verify everything. So typically, the new redistricting would go into effect. In the past, it used to be like for 2000 would have been 2003.
So you think was 2013
now,
or 2012?
It's possible they could have enacted it in time.
Because he came in 98, right? So he'd already been serving probably about 10 years or so. I don't know,
Right. So Mike Capuano was in his seat for 20 years.
Total, right.
Right, so 10 terms. And for the most part, I believe he either had no challengers or just nonsense challengers.
Right. Yeah, right. I don't remember any challengers.
Right. So this is the time it was the first serious challenger, and it was more than just a serious challenger.
Yeah.
It was a competent challenger.
Right.
Who already had a pretty solid political base.
At large.
There were racial and gender aspects to play into the politics of this, to be sure.
Right.
Also, young versus old.
But she's not a 28-year-old. She is 44. Right.
That's right.
But it was more a non-baby boomer is really more the way they want to put it. Yeah.
And I suspect that voter turnout may have played a bit into this. And let's
look at that back again.
Let's go to 2014 as well as
2015. Is that below here?
Yeah, it's below. Yeah. So the thing is that if you look, the last comparable election, at least where I look at it, would be 4 years ago. So it was not a presidential primary. Yeah, so not a presidential primary, just a state primary. So all the same seats would have been up here, except for Middlesex County Clerk of Courts, because that's every 6 years. But that's sort of it's immaterial in this discussion.
So how do we look at this? Because it's kind of confusing to me.
Okay, so what we have here is in the September 2014 state primary, which would be comparable to the September 2018 state primary, mm-hmm. what you see is roughly, well, there's some changes, like in Ward 1, Precinct 1, which is the top line, you can see there were 1,981 registered voters in 2014, and there was a good jump of about 450 more registered voters in Ward 1-1. Now, that's probably because of the new housing down in North Point or whatever. But that's kind of exceptional. If you actually look from, you know, Ward 1, Precinct 1, Ward Precinct 1, Precinct 2, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, what you'll see is the registered voters in 1994, right? Like, for example, let's look at Ward 3, Precinct 2.
Here.
There were 1,239. Yeah. Then there were 1,264, right? Okay.
Oh, in 2018.
Right. So, yeah. So a few more registered voters, right? For the most part, the number of registered voters
is relatively
constant.
But the ballots cast is very different.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah, right.
Okay? So if, we'll look at the citywide total in a minute. But if you look right across the board,
right.
You're going from Ward 1.
So it's like double.
Right. It's, yeah. It's approximately double
and some
all the
and
way
some it's four times.
Board.
I mean, look at Ward 2, too.
Well, that's also a real small one.
Oh, okay.
Kind of anomalous,
all right. What's the highest turnout?
The highest turnouts are usually in Ward 9 and Ward 11. So let's scroll down there a little bit here, which will actually get us down to the citywide total as well.
All right, so 9.
So in many of these precincts,
40%.
The turnout is about double. So I'm looking at 14 to 27.
Yeah, but it was 35, though.
18 to 36.
That's pretty high here.
19 to 38. Yeah. Your precinct was, what, 5-3?
5-3.
So you went from 19.6 to
39.1. That's
so
big.
Yeah. But it's almost exactly double.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, if you look at some of the other precincts, which are the ones that are typically high turnout precincts,
like
all of Ward 9, and some of the
is that West Cambridge? What's Ward 9?
West Cambridge. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So even 4 years ago, you had 35% turnout, 28.
Yeah, that's pretty high in 9-1. Yeah.
And then down in 11-2 and 11-3, it's 27 and 27.
Oh, that really jumped. Look at this one. Yeah.
Okay, but the thing is, now if you look at that, but the thing is that in the ones that had high turnout originally, they didn't double, but they went up. They all went up.
Well, this one, though, is 26 to 46. That's,
right. So it's
it's not quite
double,
but it's
a
lot.
But you see other ones.
Yeah.
Like going from 28 to 34. It's a 6% more, right?
But 46% is pretty high.
35 to 40%
in 9-1,
right? So what happened here is that in wards and precincts outside of the ones where you usually have a lot of the turnout, there were a lot more people just said who were normally very apathetic, just said, hey, I'm voting this time.
Well, here are the totals. You can see it here.
Right. Yeah. So the thing is, citywide, it's about double.
Yeah.
Right? So you can see there's a few more registered voters citywide, but the
12,843
people voted to 22,163.
Yeah. A lot more excitement.
In a comparable election. So about 19.7% jumping up to 33%.
Well, like you said, in the 14, it was it the governor?
That would have been a governor's
but
race
that was
as
a
well.
Primary. But are these primary totals? These are primaries.
Would it be in the primary? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there was.
So in the primary. Yeah. So
it was basically just Coakley against I don't know who.
Baker. Well, Baker.
No, it was a primary.
And I forget, I forget what was happening.
Sure.
Democratic
side
of the primary at the time, but the thing is that they weren't bringing people out like this one did.
Right.
And I'm going to guess and say that it was probably the Capuano Presley one that was really drawing attention here.
Absolutely.
I'd have to look across the state to see how the
Be curious. Do you know what the total turnout was?
I don't know what
the
increase in turnout was statewide. In Cambridge, it was really like doubled.
Right, but I'm curious if it was that high
across
the
state. I don't think it would have been doubled, but
I'd be curious about what Boston was.
Yeah, I think across the state, the races just were not as interesting, right?
Does the Secretary of State's page have those numbers? Is that where you would find that?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Now, the thing is, I usually like to wait before posting info. This I got, I went and ran over there.
Well, this week also specific
night.
To us, too.
Yeah, I think you sent me an email, and I went and ran over
right.
in the
said,
rain.
What is the percentage?
So I went running over the Election Commission at 7:30 last night and grabbed the sheets. And
it's running. Isn't it two houses away?
It's not that far, yeah. But I needed an umbrella, right? But anyway, and then they've actually posted a lot of the information on the Election Commission website if you know where to look.
Oh, okay.
So, So that was interesting, you know. And I guess the big attraction for November is just going to be the governor's race, really. Some people think there's Elizabeth Warren versus
right.
the... who's
well,
the,
this Jeff
Deal?
This Jeff Deal, which is drawing interest.
I think there'll be a lot of rhetoric, but honestly, I think it's just going to be used by Elizabeth Warren to basically polish
her.
Who
was the last
tools.
Republican senator? Was it Ed Brooke?
Ed Brooke, I think, yeah. So, so anyway, we'll, you know, we'll see how that shakes out. You know, a lot of my friends love Jake Gonzalez, but honestly, I think he needs a little more razzmatazz if you want to be
and,
a successful
Well, also,
candidate.
You know, they have to stop blaming everything on the governor when you've had a Democratic legislature forever.
Well, they're either blaming it on the governor or they're blaming it on Trump. So, you know, one or the other, right?
Well,
You know, maybe I'm just sort of naive about this, but to me, if you want to be a candidate running for anything, tell me what you're going to do. Don't tell me what the other guy didn't do. You know, focus on the positive. Don't just
I've heard him speak, Be interesting. I'm looking forward to the debates. Those are always telling.
You know, one interesting thing is, so I've been seeing a lot of the talk about the T, you know, the MBTA.
And it's all his fault.
Charlie Baker, you know, he said it, he's going to take charge, and now look at it's falling apart, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Guess what, folks?
What?
Nobody in Western Mass cares about the T. The truth is that, so, yeah, so Jay Gonzalez wins the place that's served by the T. But everybody else says, oh, you want to raise my taxes a ton? So you can support Boston's transportation.
There's no trains that go out all the way to Western Mass? I mean,
there's not a lot of political desire to basically jack up your taxes to support Boston's transportation. That's always been the problem.
Well, also, like with the toll, the pike and all that.
If you look at it, the so-called millionaires tax, which got pushed off the ballot. Right, because it was a violation because it was like multiple things you're trying to do at once, which is a violation. But anyway, had that gone on the ballot, basically the idea was we're going to increase, do this big surtax. And the idea was, and it would be dedicated toward transportation, meaning the T, but also other things. So that it was basically designed so it would get some support from other parts of the state, not just. And in fact, whenever they try and do a legislative intervention to do something about the T, it always turns into a battle where people from the other part of the state say, well, okay, but what's in it for us?
Well, that's what happened with rent control. It became a statewide initiative.
Yeah, I mean, that was
a lot
actually,
of people that didn't
that was
have
a
stake in the game said.
That was a very a clever legal maneuver to realize that, in fact,
let's
you could
get it out of Cambridge. And,
you could turn it into a statewide issue, and there was a couple of precedents. Let's not get into it, but there were some legal precedents that basically said that the question is something that involving like rent control, which was only valid in
Cambridge.
Three places.
Oh, was it other than Cambridge?
Well, there were trailer parks, Cambridge. I think there was a vestige of it still in Brookline. And,
maybe vacancy decontrol or
right.
something like
but
that.
But the thing is that there was still rent control, and I think in some of Boston. Okay, so only three. So you figure, okay, there's 300 some odd cities and towns across the state. Only three have this, so why are the people in all these other 300
get to vote on it.
Voting on this? Well, because of a legal technicality.
Which
When does something qualify as a legitimate statewide issue? And the precedent was really based on a rather curious thing about could two towns be considered statewide?
Oh.
Well, like for example, if you're building a bridge or a tunnel between two cities, is that a statewide issue? Nope. It's just between the two towns.
Yeah.
But three, you can't build a bridge or a tunnel between three towns.
That's interesting. So that's
That became a statewide. So, so there's actually a decision dating back to about 1972, actually relating to Cambridge's proportional representation system, where, in fact, that was one of the precedents that was used to say that because there was not more than just two, it was a legitimate home rule. So that's why we were allowed to keep our planning charter.
Well, it never would have gone to the a statewide vote if Cambridge had actually tried to do something about it to help small property owners.
I knew that at the time.
And they just went along figuring they'd always have the vote, they always have
the
tenants' vote. Yeah.
And I think a lot of other people who didn't acknowledge that at the time retroactively now realize, I guess we
they could have done some incremental changes.
They could have.
It was not fair.
But the
thing is,
the rhetoric at the time was we shouldn't be weakening it, we should be strengthening it. So they took
now
kind
you
of
hear,
a more
let's
militant
bring it back,
view.
Which is not really.
Well, you know, I don't think that's going to happen.
No, no.
But 1994 was also 24 years ago. So would there be some sentiment within the state to enact this? I think the answer is no, and I think it's probably emphatically no, but for a number of reasons. you know, and it's not just because, well, it's all settled, because it's not all settled, but you can change things. But I think that there would be a tremendous amount of opposition would rise up very rapidly. I mean, there's some of the revolutionaries are sort of trying to push it anyway, but I don't think
some of that, the 6 months waiting before you sell something, that was sort of trying.
So they try to do a sort of incrementally try and nibble their way toward the kind of control that they ultimately want.
I think we should look at all ways that maybe can help people get things reasonably, but you can't basically take away certain rights.
I mean, I think it's kind of valid. So is there any other election-related things?
There's a lot of meetings tomorrow, I know that.
Yeah, actually, I have to say, this is really, it's just really wild. So the city council actually comes back for the, the fall.
Not till the 17th.
Which is next Monday.
Yeah.
So this Thursday night, I'll be able to sort of look at the agenda, and guess is that, in the interim from the summer meeting till now, a lot of the councilors will have sort of, drafted.
A lot of time, because that was July 30th. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. It's like 6 weeks.
And though this may seem premature, the truth is that if you're an elected official in September of an even year, you're starting to think we're getting toward the end of the even year and the beginning of an odd year, which is a municipal election system.
Oh, please.
Listen, I'm quoting other city councilors who've said this to me over the years. But as you get closer to the end of the year, they start thinking ahead a lot more. And what that means, and I'm not trying to be cynical here.
Please do.
Well, what it means is that, actually.
What, we're not on?
No, we are just on. It's just that the light just seems a little dim here.
I'm sure they can hear you.
All right, yeah, okay. But anyway, as you start getting toward the end of the year, what will happen is, or right around this season here, is that it's in your best interest as an elected official to start pushing things out there that you can sort of hang your hat on as part of your
I thought they've been doing
re-election.
That all along. Jeez.
I think so.
Yeah, the climate initiative, the trees, Are you concerned they're not hearing you?
I wasn't so sure. Yeah, this is...
We'll talk loud, all right.
I'll yell and scream, right?
All right.
So the thing is that I imagine when I look at the agenda, there'll be probably 40 city council orders, some of which will have to do with trees, because that seems to be sort of something that people are kind of organizing around, for better or worse. But there'll be other things,
But there have been meetings, though. It's not like nothing. I mean, there's three meetings tomorrow.
Right,
like,
right. Now, the Envision Cambridge process
is... And that's tomorrow night?
Is,
one of the advisory committee meetings.
Right,
tomorrow.
So I'm on that Envision Cambridge advisory committee. So
which
we have a
senior
meeting
center.
At the Senior Center.
At 6, I think.
At 6. It was originally going to be last Thursday, which is because I had to teach a lecture, so I'd have to leave early, so this is better for me. But the thing is, that's at 6, and at 6:30,
there's something else.
A neighborhood long-term planning committee meeting.
But the city council has meetings all afternoon.
Right.
But the only one televised is at 1 o'clock. I'm going to watch that at home.
So is that the one about the scooters?
Yes, that's televised.
All right, so that's Jan
Denver's committee.
Yeah. So she wanted that one recorded.
And then there's the retail.
Right, so the retail strategy and the vacant storefronts is at 4.
4 to 6, and then 6:30 is another one?
That's the neighborhood long-term planning,
to
where
discuss,
it's about Inman Square redesign.
But I thought that's settled. No?
Well, what happened is the city council passed a home rule petition.
The
legislature said, okay. Right? You can do what you want to do.
Yeah.
But now there's challenges. There's some people in the area who says, well, here's an alternative plan. And I don't know whether that's going to go anywhere. But
I thought they presented that alternative plan at the last time this was all discussed.
Right. But it was also promised that, in fact, nothing was settled then. All we wanted to do was get authorization from the state, and then we will have the rest of the discussion.
Right. So this is the rest of the discussion? Okay.
Well, at least part of it. But,
I might.
But there's one interesting point to be made, which is this. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, part of the Inman Square redesign involves moving the bicycle traffic up onto the sidewalk.
Right.
Right? They want it, above grade on the sidewalk, right?
Okay.
So some people are saying, okay, now part of the swap here for so-called Vellucci Park was moving parkland, designated park space on one place over across the street to another space, so that it's an even swap, right? But included in that so-called park space is the area where the bike path is, which is a transportation. So arguably that's a part of the road.
Okay.
So is the bike path part of the road?
Or is it part
of the curb?
Yeah.
Or is it
part
of
the park?
So is that a legitimate part of a swapped open space.
Is that what's going to be discussed?
I don't know if it is, but I know that that's one of the points that people were making, is that, in fact, you said this was going to be even Steven, but it's not.
Hmm.
Right? I mean, the old park didn't have a bike path running through
it. I wish these were all televised. It would be better.
Yeah.
But they're not.
So. All right. So
that's going on, and then there's the Envision, which is across the street.
Right. So that's at 6 o'clock.
To, okay.
Now, so I'm going to have to do that. And then the following night, there's a...
Housing?
There's
Envision?
There's the Housing Working Group, and I'm on that too.
Where is that going to be held?
That is, I believe, over at the City Hall Annex.
Okay. You have all of this on your civic calendar.
Yeah, it's all on the site.
Okay.
But anyway, it's hectic. I think the big topic in Envision right now is actually the one which is probably a flashpoint for a lot of people in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Namely, what they were calling development scenarios. So we
have
a lot of controversy over the affordable housing overlay, and I'm not quite sure where that's going to go. And the city council is independently pushing it as well. Even though it does involve things like quadrupling the allowable density for 100% affordable housing unit projects, which is not exactly,
and maybe
a
taking
tiny
down
increase,
some trees
a lot, perhaps. Yeah. So the thing is that there's that, but there's also the development scenario. So in other words, it was a lot of this talk about the corridors and the squares, and in some of the scenarios, like they showed images, it got everybody a little worked up. You know, like 12-story buildings in the heart of Porter Square, or 19-story, I forget it was 12 or 13 or 19 stories, in the heart of Harvard Square.
Mm.
And my experience over the years has been that, you know, even with Mass and Main, which is now up to 10 stories of steel across the street from us, if 5 years ago you said, hey, we want to build a building that's 19 stories, and even in Central Square, people would go crazy and say no.
Yeah.
5 stories, 6 stories maximum, and that would be the sentiment. Well, okay, Mass and Main is being built, and it'll be about 19 stories. It was the housing part of that kind of got it pushed through.
Yeah.
So now what happens if in Harvard Square, in Porter Square, somebody says, well, we think it'd be a great idea if you build a 19-story building. Because we need the density, and we need the housing and the affordable housing.
This is all in the context of the affordable housing overlay?
No, actually, this is sort of independent, just in terms of the overall reset.
Oh, in terms of what
allowable densities and such like that.
Yeah, okay.
So my prediction is that there's going to be a lot of pushback. And it will not be uniform across the city.
Mm-mm.
You know, there'll be people up in Porter Square will be very irate, and there'll be some of the ABC people will come out and say, no, build more.
Mm-hmm.
In Harvard Square, people are going to be triply irate.
Mm.
In Central Square, maybe people would be a little more accommodating.
Well, where else are they going to build in Central Square?
I don't know, but the thing is, you could just change the zoning to allow 19-story buildings everywhere. I don't think that's going to happen, but, you know.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
But the thing is, you don't get as much pushback from a place like Central Square as you would from Harvard Square or Porter Square. So, you know, you run the risk of saying, okay, we had this big exercise running 3 years, and in the end, basically, we're going to stick the big stuff where people will tolerate it, and then we're going to not put it where people won't tolerate it. And so tell me what's changed in 3 years.
Well, all those places are near transportation. That's important.
Well, I mean, that's always been the
that's
argument.
That's the key, Porter and Harvard.
Right, so, you know, Porter Square is going to have kind of an interesting time doing any kind of pushback, because they say, well, you've got commuter rail, you've got bus lines, you've got the Red Line. So why aren't you totally embracing?
Well, then they'll bring. Well, Porter is different, I guess, than Alewife. But boy, you go by there and you say,
Well, automobile traffic is something that
that's
cannot
totally,
be ignored.
I know. And
if there's any one single thing
that
I find
going.
Most, well, you need more than one, right?
But that would be helpful.
There's, in my view, Envision Cambridge hasn't addressed transportation issues much
more than
at all.
Right. You know, you I might go to the advisory to see what happens.
Yeah, you can chat about bikes and pedestrians or whatever, but you know, there are
those
still
cars are on the road.
And,
know,
and there hasn't been much attention paid to them. So,
well, we have to end this.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, I guess we'll be back.
Yeah. Next week with lots of chock full of stuff.
No elections, but we'll be back with Cambridge Inside Out.
See you then.